I'm sure that you're all familiar with the phenomenon. You're all familiar with the phenomenon of the Shabbos sheets. You come to shul Friday night, and everybody and his kid brother is putting out an alone for Shabbos. Now the fact is, either one has to decide that he's not going to do anything else with his life and just read all of them. There's no way. I feel sometimes that a classic, perfect way to become an Aretz is to try to read them all. So I don't. But there are always people who make sure that I have them. And there are some that I look into. There are some Shabbos sheets that I'm going to take a peek. This past Shabbos, my eye hit something in one of those sheets, and the shiur is going to be based on what I saw in that alum. No, it's not so generous. I have a great deal more to say than was said in that alum. That was a one-page one. The one that I'm referring to is the one that's called Ma'at Min Ha'or. The person who writes on the front page always is Hanan Parat. If you get Makor Rishon, then it comes in your Makor Rishon. So I usually have it about 5 o'clock Friday in the morning. It comes with the newspaper. And then there's always somebody to make sure that I have it in my box over here. And my eye struck something there that developed ultimately into this shiur. He begins talking about the famous question, the Ramban. On our sheet, it's number one, we give you the whole Ramban. I'm not going to read the whole Ramban, but there are sections that we will read. The Ramban is in Parshat Miketz, last week said. The brothers come to Yosef, to Mitzrayim, in order to buy grain. Yosef sees them, he recognizes them, but they don't recognize him. And it says, "Vayizkor Yosef et hachalamot asher chalam lahem," and Yosef remembered the dreams that he dreamt lahem. Ramban brings Rashi, "Alehem," the dreams that he dreamt about them. "V'yoda shenitkaimu," and he knew now that those dreams were fulfilled. "Shehari hishtachavulo," because they bowed down to him. Lishon Rashi, this is what Rashi says. That here it is, the dreams are fulfilled. He had two dreams. One dream was that they are putting together sheaves of grain into bundles. And there are 11 bundles around his bundle, which is in the middle, and all the others bow down to him. He had a second dream. In the second dream, the sun and the moon and 11 stars bow down to him. So Rashi says, he saw his brothers, he remembered the dreams, and he saw that they were fulfilled. Ramban says, oh no, wasn't fulfilled at all. There are 11 bundles of grain that bow down to him. There's a sun and a moon that has to bow down to him, which represent his father and his mother obviously will never be able to do so, but at least his father. So the Ramban says that therefore, whatever Yosef is going to do afterwards, he's going to accuse them of being spies. He's going to make them go back to Canaan and bring Binyamin. Everything is calculated so that the dreams that he had should be fulfilled. In other words, if you wonder, why does he put his brothers through this terrible ordeal? They're incarcerated, they are put into jail, and then he takes Shimon from them. I mean, all sorts of things happen. And then after they come for the second time, he frames Binyamin with the cup, which leads us, of course, to the beginning of this week's Sedra, by Yigash, where we have the confrontation between Yehuda and Yosef. Yehuda is going to stand up on behalf of Binyamin. Well, why does he do all of this? Why does he do all of this? So the Ramban says he does all of this because he wants to make sure that the dreams are indeed going to be fulfilled. Because the first time around when they came, they were not fulfilled. Because it was 10 brothers who came, and that's not 11. So therefore he has to make sure that they're going to come down together with Binyamin, and then it's going to be 11 who will bow down to him. And then the next thing he's going to have to accomplish is to bring them back another time, and this time with the father, and the father should also bow down to him. Then all of the dreams will be fulfilled. And the Ramban says, you have to say that this was behind all of the strange behavior of Yosef. You'll see where it's underlined. Line number 10 in the Ramban. Velule Cain, if that would not have been the purpose of everything that takes place in Pashat Miketz, and at the end of Miketz, the beginning of Ayigash, if that's not the purpose, Hoya Yosef Choteched Godo Litzayr Et Aviv, Yosef would have committed a terrible sin causing pain to his father, Ulahamido Yomim Rabim Bishchol Ve'evel, and permitting his father to remain for so many years bereaved and in mourning, Al Shimon Ve'olav, about Shimon and about him, Ve'afim Hoya Ritzonu Litzayr Et Achav Ktzat, even if his intent was to cause some pain to his brothers, Echlo Yachmol Al Seva Toviv, how is he not going to have mercy on the old age of his father? Aval et hakol aso yofa biito. The Ramban does this very often. He borrows a beautiful pasuk from Kohelet. God, Kohelet said, God made everything beautiful in its time. Spring, summer, fall, winter, hakol, sunrise, sunset. So the Ramban borrows the pasuk and he says, everything that Yosef did, he did Yofa Biito, beautiful in its time, Lekayem Hachalomot, to fulfill the dreams, Ki Yoda Sheyitkaimu Be'emet. He knew that they're going to be fulfilled, and he's going to make sure that they're going to be fulfilled. He understood that the dreams that he had were a form of prophecy, and he's going to do it. He's going to do it. And Ramban later on is going to go ahead and tell us that the art of interpreting dreams and knowing dreams is something that Yosef is an expert in. He's the one who has interpreted the dreams of the butler, the baker, Paro. Yosef knows what it's all about. Then, where it's underlined, the next time, V'chein ani yomer, and so I say, shall kol ha'inyonim ha'ele ha'yu bi Yosef me'chokhmato b'pitron ha'chalomot. All that Yosef did was because of the wisdom that he had in the interpretation of dreams. This is one of the famous lines in the Ramban in Chumash. Because there's a big question. Yosef was so many years in Mitzrayim. He was appointed as a Nogid. Somebody was in charge of the house of Potiphar, and afterwards he becomes Sheni LaMelech. How didn't he send a letter to his father? Why didn't he send a postcard? Why doesn't he put his father out of his misery? Why doesn't he send a letter and say, Pa, I'm okay, I'm alive? To let him know that he's alive, and to console him, because Mitzrayim is 6 days' ride away from Hebron. You send a rider and he'll make it there in 6 days, and you can send, it can even be quicker than the mail. 6 days. And then the Ramban goes on to say, and what happens if it takes a year to get there? If the correct thing is to let his father know, how do you permit an alter yid, an alter tata, to remain suffering? Send a letter, notify him, tell him. And more than that, how precious it would be for his father to redeem Yosef's soul from Egypt. He would come and redeem him with a great deal of money. So therefore the Ramban says there had to be rhyme and reason to Yosef's not sending a letter. And his position is, the rhyme and reason was, Avol Hoyaroe, he saw Ki Hishtachavoyat Achav Lo V'gam Aviv V'chol Zaroito, he saw that ultimately his brothers and his father and all of their seed bowing down to him, It's not going to happen in Eretz Yisrael. He hoped that his father would come to Mitzrayim. He would see Yosef. He would bow down. And certainly after he interpreted the dream of Paro, so he already knew that ultimately his family is going to come to Mitzrayim, because there's going to be a devastating famine in all of the world, and only one place is there going to be grain. They're going to have to come to him. Fact is, there are some of the Mefarshim, of course, question the Ramban, and it's a good Akasha. Who says that Yosef has to make sure that his dreams are going to be fulfilled? If this is some kind of a minor or a major prophecy from God, you know who's supposed to take care of that? The Rebbeinu was supposed to take care of that. You know what your responsibility as a son is? To let your father know that you're alive. You can't sacrifice your father on the altar of the dreams that you had. The Rebbein Shem gave you a dream. It's his business. He'll take care of it. The Akedat Yitzchak, Rabbi Yitzchak Aroma, asks this question on the Ramban. But the important thing that we're going to deal with is the Ramban's question. How didn't he send a letter home? How do you do it? In the in this Shabbos alone, Ma'at Min Ha'or, he brings an answer that was written some years ago by Yoel Bin Nun, one of the people who is a great Tanakhist in this country. And when I read what Yoel Bin Nun wrote, I would say that most probably my blood pressure jumped sky high. I most probably became, I was quite aggravated. I was upset. And then, of course, I was thrilled to see that Hanan Torat, who's writing the article, says that this is an approach, Hamikomemet, that is upsetting. Of all the strange things, I had some guests Friday night at the house, and I had seen it before eating Friday night, and I'm already, I'm boiling. And I tell this over to some of the yeshiva baruch in the house. So one of them tells me he's ready. Mashgiach of the big yeshiva said the same thing. I said, right, this is getting worse. This is getting worse. And I said, with all due respect to your mashgiach and your yeshiva, I think he's dead wrong. And I don't usually tell people that they're dead wrong. I'll say that, you know, I respectfully disagree here. It's not respectfully I disagree. I just plain disagree. What does he say? You know what he says? Let's read it. Number two, the third line. These are the words of Yoel Bin Nun. Yosef shoel et atzmo. Yosef asks himself. After it's all, he's been sold into slavery. He's in Mitzrayim. And he's trying to make sense of the events that have taken place. What happened here? Yosef asks himself, why did father send me to the brothers? Why did he send me to see how the brothers are? Father didn't know that Shimon and Levi are dangerous people? They don't like me? Why does he send me there? And then he's wondering, he has no idea what the brothers said when they came home. They came home without Yosef. Does he know that they come home with a ketonet pasim that is dripping with blood? They don't know. So Yosef doesn't know. And he's trying to imagine what could the brothers have said to father when they came home? He can't imagine. Ein manos od. So finally, after who knows how much time that Yosef is thinking about it, he says, Yoel Bin Nun says, there's no way to get out of it. We must arrive at a conclusion that is as sharp-edged as a razor. Ein manos od min hamaskana ha-chadaketar ha-achim shichnu et abba. You know what Yosef decides? The brothers had convinced Yaakov that Yosef is a danger to the family. And Father is in on the plot. That's why he sent him to Shechem, so that he should fall into the hands of Shimon and Levi. Do you know what he's saying? Yaakov Avinu, Yosef thinks, is Don Corleone. Marlon Brando himself. He gave out a contract on Yosef. That's what Yosef thinks, you understand? This is what Yosef, or Isaac. They sent out a contract. Beautiful. Yoel Ben Nun says that this is what Yosef thinks. This is going on in Yosef's mind. Yosef has decided, why did Father send me? Doesn't he know that Shimon and Levi are dangerous? What did they say when they came home? The only thing Yoel Ben Nun says makes sense to him is that Yosef was convinced. And he says, there's no way. There's no way to get away from it. This is the only conclusion. That Yosef was convinced that they had gotten the father over onto their side, and Yosef sent, Yaakov sent Yosef there in order to be rubbed out by the brothers. And then, Yisurei Nefesh Elu Kavu Hashlamash Keitah. The Yisurei Nefesh that he went through when he arrived at this conclusion, that Father is against me too. I mean, obviously, Yosef has to badly, according to Yoel Ben Nun, he badly needs a therapist, a psychiatrist, you understand? He's paranoid. Father is after him too. And after he finally was able to get over the terrible shock of realizing, this is what he assumes, And proof of it, of course, is that when his first son is born, he calls him Menashe. Ki nashani elukim et kol amolid et kol beit avi. God made me forget my father's house and all of my suffering. Nishia! All right. Needless to say, I have a different pshat. And my different pshat I said 25 years ago, but over the years I've improved on it. Not only that, in a pretty nice sense, Hanan Porat agrees with me. I'm going to have to let him know. And Ben Shneinu, I'm going to take a completely different approach than the approach of Yoel Ben Nun. And I wonder now, I'm going to have to reread in the Hatzofer. This past year, there must have been about 15 or 20 weeks in which there was a debate in the pages of Hatzofer, and the debate started with an article by Yoel Ben Nun, and I'm going to have to read it all over again. And I will, Mirza Hashem. The debate was the following. How do you learn Tanakh? And here, I learned this Israeli terminology. Yoel Ben Nun is one of those who says that you have to learn Tanakh Begova ha'inayim. Begova ha'inayim, you read it as you see it. In other words, yes, that we have the right to psychoanalyze Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. David sinned. That's all. David sinned. Chazal say, mi kol ha'om, whoever says David chata eino el Torah, but you know, you have to understand it was a sin. We have to read Tanakh Begova ha'inayim. Then, of course, there are those who say, Chas v'shalom, we're dealing with Gedolei Olam, we're talking about Kedoshei Elyon, we're talking about people that are light years away from us. We can understand those people on our own level. But somebody who holds that you learn Tanakh Begova ha'einayim is the one who's able to arrive at this kind of a theory that Yosef, in his mind, sees the father as putting out a contract on him, and they're going to rub him out. I don't see it like that at all. So I'll tell you how 25 years ago I answered, humbly, I answered the Ramban's question. When do you send a letter home? You know when you send a letter home? Send a letter home when you assume that when the mailman is going to bring the letter, whoever picks up the mail is going to give a jubilant cry of joy. fellas, there's a letter from Yosef. Yosef! Yosef is no fool. He knows that there will be no such cry of jubilation if a letter comes from Yosef. Chances are it'll never make it to Yaakov, because whoever gets it is going to tear it up and destroy it. He knows how the brothers feel about it. There's another mystery, and the other mystery is that Yosef doesn't have a clue what kind of a story the brothers concocted. He has no way of knowing. But one thing he knows for sure: if a letter from him ever gets through to Yaakov, he's going to open up a frightening Pandora's box in that house. Somebody's going to have to explain what happened and how it happened. Do you know what Yosef is afraid of? Father may find out that I'm alive, but in the process, he's going to lose another 10 of his children. It will tear the house asunder. It's going to rip them apart. He's going to create a problem that all the king's men and all the king's horses will never be able to put that family together again. That's what he has to be concerned about. And that's what he is concerned about. That's why he's not going to write a letter. Because he has absolutely no way of knowing what impact or what terrible result will come from that letter. That's why he doesn't write a letter. Not because his father is Marlon Brando. All right. Now I'm going to prove it. That's the general thesis. The rest is proof. One. Take a look at number five. This is in this week's Seder. A Ramban, another Ramban. The Ramban is in Parshas Vayigash. The brothers come home, and this time they come home with the news that Yosef is alive. Vayidabru Elav, they said to him, to Yaakov, as Kol Divrei Yosef, all of the words of Yosef. Listen carefully to the Ramban. Yir'eh li al derech ha-pshat. It seems to me, according to the pshat in the psukim, not taking into consideration medrash, pshat, shelo hukad li Yaakov kol yomov, ki achav machru et Yosef. Nobody ever told Yaakov during his entire lifetime that the brothers sold Yosef. He never knew. Aval choshav, if he didn't know, so what happened that day when he sent Yosef? What happened? What does he understand in his mind? So the Ramban has it figured out very clearly. This is the scene. The brothers come home. They bring the ketonet pasim dripping with blood. Where did you find it? Dotan. So Yaakov says, Dotan? Weren't you in Shechem? Oh yeah, we went to Shechem. And there wasn't enough grazing land, so we moved to Dotan. Yaakov, chab tzachum bam kop. I made a mistake. I thought you were in Shechem, and I sent Yosef to Shechem. He most probably got lost in the field, a 17-year-old boy. Who knows who found him and took him away? By the way, the fact is that he was toeh basoda, he was wandering in the field, the pasuk says, and a man found him, Gabriel the Malach, who tells him where his brothers are. Otherwise, he would have been lost in the field. So Yaakov, in a sense, blames himself. I told him to go to Shechem, but you weren't in Shechem. So the Ramban says, if nobody ever told Yaakov what had happened to Yosef, Aval Choshav, he thought, ki hoyotoa besod, he was wandering in the field, v'hamotim oto, whoever found him, l'kochu, they took him, u'machru oto l'mitzchayim, and they sold him to Mitzchayim. Because now the Ramban makes a very, very simple process of elimination. He says none of the brothers would ever have dared tell father what happened, because they were frightened of him that he would curse them, get angry and curse them, just as next week Sedra he's going to do with Reuven, Shimon, and Levi. The fear of Yaakov Avinu was awesome. Nobody was going to come and tell him, Pa, you know, we didn't like your Yosef so much. So we decided we're going to sell him off into slavery. You understand the explosion that would have taken place? So he says, The brothers didn't want to tell him their sin, because they were afraid for their own lives, lest he get angry and curse them as he did to Reuben, Shimon, and Levi. Now listen to the next line in the Ramban. V'yosef b'musaro ha'tov lo chatzol ha'gidlo. Yosef, because of his ethical and moral personality, didn't want to tell them. What's Yosef going to do? Hey, pa, you know what your kinderlach did? Yeah, you like them, huh? You know what they did to me? They sold me into slavery. Ramban says, shomu shamayim. Perish the thought. Yosef would never, ever have done that. Yosef was Yosef HaTzadik. You don't even have to be a tzadik. You just have to have good common sense. All that Yosef would have been accomplished by that is, number one, destroying the family in a way that it would never be put together again, and he would destroy his father. No father likes to hear that 9 of his children went ahead and sold a brother into slavery to Mitzrayim. Yosef b'musaro hatov lo rotzo l'hagidlo. That's why the Ramban explains, that's why at the end of Sefer Bereshit, at the end of Ayachi, when they come back from the Levaya of Yaakov, from Hebron to Mitzrayim, the brothers say, your father commanded before his death that you should be good to us and not hurt us. They were frightened that now, this is the moment, Yosef was waiting for the moment that Yaakov would be gone, and now all of the revenge is going to come out. Years of anger are going to explode. So the Ramban says, would Yaakov Avinu have known what the brothers did to Yosef? The brothers, seeing that Yaakov is near death, they would have begged Yaakov, make Yosef swear that he's not going to hurt us. Why didn't they do that? Why did they have to concoct the lie that Avicha Tzivo Lifnei Moto, your father commanded before his death? You know why he had to do it? He had to do it because nobody ever told Yaakov. Yaakov never knew. The brothers wouldn't tell, and Yosef, because of his decency and his greatness, would never ever have told the father. The Ramban is certainly not talking about Yaakov being one of the conspirators in the abduction and kidnapping of Yosef. Which brings me to the next point. It's all going to build up into one fascinating, powerful idea. Oh, Hanan Porat brings a beautiful story. I've used a different story. If there's time, we'll use my story. He brings a beautiful story. A story that was written by Shai Agnon. The story is about a fellow called Menashe Chaim and his wife, Breindel Charna. What a story. Menashe Chaim was very, very poor, lived in Buchach. I think most of Agnon's stories, that's the city he came from, it's in Buchach. Anyway, he was very poor. Finally, his wife convinced him that he should go off into the world to beg. Bring back Epis Panusa, go out into the world, the Kveis to the Shtetlach, the villages, the hamlets of the Ukraine, of Poland, Galicia. So he got a letter of recommendation. You know, we see it all the time, somebody comes with a letter of recommendation. I don't know if they had plastic to put it into in those days, but here he gets a letter of recommendation from the Rav of Buchach, saying that Menashe Chaim is indeed in need and he's a good Jew. And anybody who's going to aid and assist Menashe Chaim, you understand, will be zeichet to grace, great reward. Menashe Chaim goes off into the world, and somewhere out there he meets up with another beggar, and the beggar convinces him by giving him an offer he cannot refuse, to sell him the letter of recommendation. A letter of recommendation from the Rav of the Judge. That's not easy to come by. So Menashe Chaim sells it. And this fellow goes off. Sometime later, this fellow is found dead. And the only identification they have on him is he has the letter of recommendation from the Rav of Buchach, from Menashe Chaim of Buchach. Shaila comes before Bezdin, and they decide that Breindl China is able to remarry. She's not an Aguna because Menashe Chaim, here is the proof that Menashe Chaim died. Sometime later, Menashe Chaim is finally on his way home back to Buchach. The day before he arrives in Buchach, he meets somebody. They're talking, and he says, "Oh, you know, Breindl China had a baby boy. Tomorrow is the bris." Breindl China had remarried. She had a baby. Tomorrow is the bris. Then and there, Menashe Chaim made the decision. He's going to go off to a cemetery someplace and live there for the rest of his life. He doesn't have the right to destroy the happiness of Breindl China. He doesn't have the right to turn that child into a mamzer. He will never say a word. He's gone. He's out of here. End of story. Interesting, of course, that Agnon gave him the name Menashe. One of the many meanings, of course, in the story is there are moments at which the most precious and holy commodity of all is silence. Silence. What I want to present is the idea that Yosef is the great practitioner of the art of silence. You have to know when to remain absolutely quiet and not utter a word out of your mouth. I'm going to show you two medrashim. I can bring many, but let's go to number four. In the Megillah it says, Ein Esther Magedet Moladeta. Esther does not tell her home, her birthplace. Ahasuerus wants to know, and it says it twice in the Megillah, when they are gathering together the women who are going to be brought to Ahasuerus, the agents who come to bring her to the palace, she refuses to tell them her name and her birthplace. After he marries her, he asks her again, Ein Esther Magedet Moladeta. Melamed, this comes to teach us, Shetofso Shtika Ba'atzma Kirachel Zekenta. She grabbed on to the ethic of silence, just as her mother Rachel. The greatest tragedy that can befall a kala who's ready to go to the chuppah is that somebody else goes to the chuppah to marry her beloved, and she never knows whether she will ever marry him. Do you understand the sacrifice of Rachel? Can you understand? I think we're incapable of comprehending. She acquiesces. Absolute silence. Absolute silence. Kirachel zekento, like her bubba, Esther's bubba, Rachel, shetofsa pelech shtika, that she held on to pelech shtika. The word pelech over here means the art of remaining silent. Ondu kol gedolei zaro b'shtika. All of the great of the children of Rachel followed in her footsteps, and they also knew when to remain absolutely silent. Rachel tavsa pelach shtika. Rachel is the one who held on to the art of silence. Ro'ata sivlon otel b'yad achota. She saw all the wedding presents in the hands of her sister. V'shatkan, she remained silent. Binyamin bina, her son Binyamin, tafas b'shtika. He also remained silent. Teida, she'avno hoysa b'choshen hoysa yoshbei. The stone, the gem, in the breastplate of the Kohen Gadol of Binyamin, his was Yoshbei. And the Medrash says, do you know what Yoshbei means? Yeshpeh. He knows that the brothers have sold Yosef. He has a mouth, but he remains silent. When Rashi in last week said, when he's brought before Yosef, so Yosef, he doesn't know that it's Yosef. Binyamin doesn't know, so Yosef asks him about his children, and he tells him that the names of his 10 children, and he asked him, what's the pshat in the name? So Rashi explains that Binyamin said, I had a brother and I lost my brother, and each one of the children is named after an event in Yosef's life, or how he feels about Yosef. He knows about it all, but he remained silent. Lama, Yodei Ahar Yabin Mechidat Yosef, Binyamin knew about the sale of Yosef, v'shotekin, he remained silent. Yoshfei, Yeshpeh, v'shotekin, he has a mouth, but he remains silent. Shol ben Benor, Shol was a grandson of Rachel. V'dvar ha'melucha lo higidlo. When he goes out to find the donkeys that were lost, he can't find them, so he comes to Shmuel, and he asks Shmuel about the donkeys, and not only does Shmuel tell him that the donkeys have already been found, and they're worried about you, but he anoints him as the first king over Israel. He comes home, his uncle asks him, what happened? He says, yeah, we were by the prophet Shmuel, told us that the donkeys were found. V'dvar ha'melucha lo higidlo. The fact that he had been anointed the king of Israel, he didn't tell him. Shaul knows when to remain silent. Therefore, the Medrash concludes, Esther, Ein, Esther, Magedet, Moladeto Ve'et Amo. Just like Rachel, Esther also remains silent. And I add, Yosef, the son of Rachel, he knows how to remain silent. He knows that if he opens up his mouth, he may bring such destruction down upon that family. He remains silent. Take a look down at the bottom of the page. I have a pasuk from Yeshayahu. Yeshayahu in chapter 53 is talking about the suffering servant of Israel. Israel that's going to suffer throughout history. No nigas v'hu na'aneh, oppressed and tortured. The lo yiftach piv. He doesn't open up his mouth. Kasel atevach yuvol, he is brought like a sheep to the slaughter. And look at the next three words. U'kirachel lifnei gozezeha. A rachel is a shepsala, a ewe, lifnei gozezeha, before those who shear her wool. Rachel, silent. Ne'eloma, says Yeshayahu, silent. V'lo yiftach piv. Rachel, kishmo kein hi, she is just like her name. Silent like the lamb. We'll go one step further. Up here, number three. Medrash Tanchuma. Listen very carefully to this. I had once said years ago at Shir of a completely different nature about this Medrash, but now I'm going to take the simple meaning of the Medrash. After the brothers sell Yosef, Amru, they said, Nacharim beinenu, let us make a ban of communication, excommunication, amongst us. Shelo yagid echad mimenu liYaakov avinu. Let's place a ban upon ourselves that not a single one of us is ever going to tell Yaakov what took place here. Amar lahem Yehuda. So Yehuda said to them, Ruvain eino kan, Ruvain isn't here. Ve'ein hacherem mitkayem ela ba'asara, and the cherem needs a minion of 10. We're only 9. Me'osu, what did they do? Shitfu l'akodesh baruch hu ba'osu acherem. They counted the Rebbeinu Shleilam as the 10th to the minion. Shelo yagid laviyem. The Rebbeinu Shmosu was not going to tell their father. Kivan sheyorad Ruvain ba'layla lo'oto abo, when Ruvain came down that night to the pit, la'aloto, to bring Yosef out of the pit, v'lo mitzo, and he didn't find him, kora es be'kara, God of Ubacha, he tore his garments and he cried. Chazal Echav, he returned to his brothers on Amal and he said to them, Hayelad Anena, the child isn't there, Vani Ona Anibo, what's going to happen with me? They told him about the deed that was done, the Etachedem, and the ban of excommunication on anybody who opened up his mouth. And you know what Reuven did? Shasak, he remained silent. And even HaKadosh Baruch Hu himself, even though it says about him, and we say it every morning in davening, Magid Varov Li Yaakov, the Rishon tells things to Yaakov, Davar Zeh Lo Higid, this he did not tell Yaakov, Mipnei HaChedem, because of the ban of excommunication, Lefichach Omar Yaakov, since nobody is going to tell him, and nobody tells him, therefore Yaakov said, Tarof Toraf Yosef, Yosef has been torn apart by a wild animal. Not a simple medrash. We'll deal with a few of the questions in the medrash. I never saw anybody that asks it, but I think they're good questions. Number one, and you'll agree with me. Number one, where is the halacha that excommunication requires a minyan? Maybe a bezin of three. A minyan? A minyan you need for a davar shebekedusha, something of sanctity. Baruch Hu, kriyat ha-Torah, tefillah b'tzibur, amen yehei shmei rabba. That's when you need, by a davar shebekedusha, you need a minyan. Where does Yehuda come up with this halacha that you need a minyan? Worse. This is a conspiracy of silence. These are people who have perpetrated a terrible crime. And you know who becomes a collaborator with them? No less than the Rabbein Shalom himself. How does the Rabbein Shalom become part of such a minion? How does he make a minion for the great cover-up? You understand? Yeah, you want to cover up? Go ahead, let's cover up. I'm part of the minion. What's going on over here? How do we understand this message? I say the following. I'm asking a rhetorical question now. Who theoretically would have been the first one who could possibly have gone to Father and said, do you know? And I'm not talking about Reuven. Reuven controls himself until that moment in the presence of Tzofnat Paneach, when the brothers finally say 22 years later, Aval Hashem Anachnu, we are guilty that we didn't listen to the cries of our brother. And Reuven says, Amarti Lachem, I told you, Al Techetu Bayeled, don't sin with the child. But he didn't say a word for 22 years. You know who's the most likely to say it? The one who has convinced himself in his own mind that he's really guilty. He's really innocent. And the next guy is guilty. The one who's going to say it to Yaakov is not going to come to Yaakov and say, Tata, I cannot tell a lie. I assisted in selling Yosef into slavery. That's not what he's going to do. You know what he's going to do? He's going to come and say, Pop, this hurts me. Hurts me more than it hurts you. But they sold your son into slavery. Nobody's going to be able to come over to Yaakov and say, listen, I did it. And you know what's going to happen? That man is going to destroy the whole family. Destroy the whole family in such a way there will never be a Klal Yisrael. You know what's accomplished by the silence? What's accomplished by the silence is that they can't tear each other apart. And by the way, they were ready to do it. They were ready to play the most dangerous game of all, the blame game. People are always good at pointing a finger of blame at somebody else. Very rarely do people ever point the finger of blame at themselves. I bring the Rashi in number 6, right after the parsha of the sale of Yosef, there's an interruption in the story of Yosef. The parsha ends with saying that Yosef was sold to Mitzrayim, and then we start with the parsha of Vayede Yehuda Me'esechov. Yehuda went down from his brothers, and we get the whole story of him marrying the daughter Bathshua, the Canaanite, and Er, and Onan, and Shelah, and Tamar, and Peretz, and Zarah, the whole story. And then after chapter 38, we go back again, and the Pasuk says Yosef was sold to Mitzrayim, and then we go back to the story of Yosef. So Rashi asks, why is there an interruption in the story of Yosef? The flow of the story of Yosef is broken by the story of Yehuda. It interrupted the parsha of Yosef. L'lamed, it comes to teach us, Shehoriduhu echov migedulato. The brothers brought Yehuda down from his greatness. Kisherou b'tzoras avihim, and they saw the pain of their father. They said, Ato amato l'machro, you told us to sell. Everybody is guilty. You were there, and you remained silent. While your brother, Ayyush Akint, is sold off into slavery, you're all equally guilty. There's another significant factor involved in this chedem. If they would be permitted to speak, which as I say would reach the point where they're going to blame one another, the one who can blame his sins on somebody else will never be able to do tshuva. If they can speak, they will never do tshuva. Because everybody is going to find somebody else Yehuda would say, what are you talking about? And this fellow, Reuven, puts him into a pit with snakes and scorpions. Sugar. Shimon and the lady want to kill him. I saved them. You're the bad guys. I don't know what fool and God, Asher, Don, Naphtali, everybody will have a story. But when you can't speak, then you know what? You're alone with your own conscience for 22 years. And do you know what the result of that silence is? That they all say in unison, Avol Hashemim Anachnu, we are guilty. Blessed holy silence. You know why you need a minion? Because to keep the family of Klal Yisrael together is the greatest Tovah Shefi Kedusha of all. Because if you don't have that family, there will never be anybody to say Amen or Amen Yeshmei Rabba or Baruch Hu or Shemona Esrei or listen to Kriyas HaTorah. The greatest Tovah Shefi Kedusha is to hold this frail house of Yaakov together until they can grow up and become a Klal Yisrael. Of course you need a minion. This is the greatest Tovah Shefi Kedusha of all. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Why does he join in this conspiracy of silence? Because he too understands they'll never be able to do tshuva if they can talk. They'll never be able to do tshuva. All of my plans for a Klal Yisrael that will carry the name of God throughout history are not going to be realized. And the Rebbeinu Shel Olam also knows one other very, very important factor. Whenever there is blame and guilt to be handed out, there is somebody who's going to say, and where was God at the pit? Why didn't you intervene and save Yosef? Where was God at Auschwitz? You couldn't have stopped the brothers from doing it. The Rebbeinu Shel Olam knows when they're handing out blame, when they're dishing it out, there's always going to be somebody who's going to dump all of the blame on God. And you know what that is? When you dump the blame on God, that's a chilul Hashem. Protecting the integrity of a Rebbeinu Shel Olam is the greatest kiddush Hashem. For that you need a minion, and for that the Rebbeinu Shel Olam is going to join the minion. He'll make sure that there's going to be a minion. He's going to save Klal Yisrael that way. That's how he's going to do it. There's another medrash that says Yitzchak knew, and Yitzchak remained silent. Is there any wonder why Yosef remained silent? Yosef, blessed, sanctified, holy silence. The silence of Menashe Chaim. That's what it's all about. The silence of Menashe Chaim. Because he knows that if he opens up this whole issue, there's going to be it will have such a destructive effect on the whole family. It will never ever be repaired. And inexorably, we only have a week and a half until Parshas Vayechi. And by the end of Parshas Vayechi, this has to be a family that is all put together again. And the only thing that will keep them together at this great moment is silence. You don't have to say everything. There's a certain ethic today, letting it all hang out, coming out of the closet. There are a lot of people that should stay in the closet permanently. Understand? Not everything has to be said. Not everything has to be broadcast. Not everything has to be broadcast. Yes, freedom of speech, you understand? Say whatever you want, regardless of how harmful it can be to Klal Yisrael. Say anything you want. Anything you want. There's a holiness to silence. There's the silence of Rachel, the silence of Esther, the silence of Binyamin, the Rebbeinu Shel Olam. Klal Yisrael's silence is when there's tragedy, Rachman and Islam. Rav says it a number of places. We never ask the Rebbeinu Shel Olam why. We're not going to get an answer for that question. But the question that we do ask is, what can we do now? What can we do now to grow from that experience, to make sure it doesn't ever happen again? That's the way we look at a tragedy. Yosef knows he'll send a letter. He will send a letter. He'll destroy a family. I reject out of hand the idea that, well, he's not going to send a letter home because Pa is in on the plot against him. Sorry. The Lova Lechiti. The Rav. In a number of the shiurim, and I still remember the first time I heard the story, my oldest brother, Arashon, told me the story. You remember the Yud Lamed Peretz story of Bunche Schweig? God, I'm going to read a little bit. A little bit of Bunche Schweig I'll read to you. I read it today once, and I wasn't able to finish it. I just, you know, like I stopped someplace in the middle of a sentence because I was going to burst out into tears. The Chav tells the story in one of his shiurim. Bunche the silent. Down here in this world, silent Bunche's death made no impression at all. Ask anyone you like who Bunche was, how he lived, and what he died of, whether of heart failure, or whether his strength gave out, or whether his back broke under a heavy load, and they don't know. Perhaps after all, he died of hunger. Bunche lived quietly and died quietly. He passed through our world like a shadow. He lived like a little dun-colored grain of sand on the seashore amongst millions of his kind. And when the wind lifted him and blew him over to the other side of the sea, nobody noticed it. Nobody noticed it. When he was alive, the mud in the street preserved no impression of his feet. After his death, the wind overturned the little board on his grave. The gravedigger's wife found it a long way off from the spot and boiled a pot full of potatoes over it. 3 days after that, the gravedigger had forgotten where he had laid him. His likeness remained photographed in nobody's brain, in nobody's heart. Not a trace of him remained. A quiet birth, a quiet life, a quiet death, and a quieter burial. Man who suffered his whole lifetime was a nothing. Oy, then you'd love it there, it says. But it was not so in the other world. There, Bunche's death made a great impression. And he describes how the sound of Moshiach's shofar is heard throughout the heavens. Angels are flapping and flying around their wings. And they are saying to one another, Bunche is coming. Bunche Schweig is on the way. And in heaven, there is great joy. They bring out a gold throne, a seat for Bunche. And as he brought in, he's never been surrounded with anything of this sort. Nobody ever paid any attention to him. He can't believe that they're really paying all this attention to him. It can't be. It must mean somebody else. Somebody else must be coming. He can't for the life of him. He can't figure it out. They bring him before the heavenly court, and the trial is going to begin. The defense attorney says, Bunche, it's only a formality. We're going to go through this very quickly. You have no problem up here. And they begin to describe Bunche's life, and he's sitting with it. He can't figure it out. This is me. No, it can't be. It must be somebody else. And when they finally describe how his stepmother beat him to within an inch of his life, it's me they're talking about. He never meant anything. He never made any impression on anybody. Bunche the silent. Lived in silence, died in silence. Boy, but up there. And then they say, this court, this heavenly court has decided, Bunche, you can have anything you want. And one of the beautiful parts of the story, Bunche says, Take? And the judge says, Take. And Bunche says again, Take? And all of the angels begin to say, Take, Take, Take. Yeah, right. If so, he says, I'd like a warm roll and butter every morning for breakfast. That's Bunche Schweig. The Rav uses the story as saying the value system of Klal Yisrael is completely different than the value system of any other people on the face of this earth. What is meaningless to other people is extremely meaningful to us. What's meaningful up there is maybe insignificant down here. You have to be able to have a Torah or a Jewish approach in order to be able to see what's really of value, what is not of value. Bunche's silence was that which made him so beloved up there. Bunche is coming. There is silence that is an absolute blessing. It's holy. It's sanctified. This is Rachel. Who more than anybody else is like Rachel? Yosef is Rachel. What do you think?
Yosef is going to send a letter home. Yosef is going to send a letter home. He's going to take the risk of destroying his family? Not a chance. Not a chance. Yosef is going to remain silent. By the way, Rashi is going to say at the beginning of Shmos, Yosef Hoyim Ben Tzayim, who Yosef? It was the same Yosef in the house of his father. It was the same Yosef in the house of Potiphar. It was the same Yosef in prison. It was the same Yosef in the house of Paro. Yosef, the tzaddik, has a personality that doesn't get shaken up. He is able to respond with an equilibrium to every situation in life. There's a certain serenity about Yosef. Serenity. This is Rachel. But is silence always a virtue? Absolutely not. Leman Tzion lo echeshel, leman Yerushalayim lo eshkot, I will not remain silent for Yerushalayim and Tzion. And what about Rachel herself? Kol b'rama nishma, the voice is heard on high from Gala. Nehi b'chi tamrudim. Rachel nevaka albaner. Rachel crying for his children. She stands up there before the Gemeshim. She pounds on the table. Me'anol hinachem. She refuses to be consoled. Albanero kienanu, for her children are out there. And she's the only one that forces the Gemeshim into the position where he gives that amazing bracha that we are the fulfillment of. We are the beneficiaries of Rachel Imenu's thunderous assault on heaven. The shovel bottom of the Gvulam, the Rebbe Yisrael says, he gives his promise to children in return. Rachel is not simply silent because her personality is a silent one. She knows when silence is the great virtue. She knows when silence is golden. And boy, does she know when the time has come to raise her voice on high so that it shakes the very heavens and the Rebbe Yisrael himself. Yosef HaTzadik did not arrive at a razor-sharp conclusion from which there is no getting away that his father was in on the plot to do him in. Tishachach HaDover, it should be forgotten. Yosef is the real son of his mother. He knows when to speak and what to say, and when to remain silent. That's why he doesn't send a letter. That's why his brothers remain silent. That's why the Rebbe Yishim remains silent. That's why Binyamin remains silent. That's why Shaul remains silent. Everyone. Because they know that's the greatest blessing. And the proof is that Klal Yisrael emerges from that silence. She asked a very good question. I'll tell you what the question was. Here I'm describing Yosef as the great practitioner of silence, but it all started because he brought Dibatam Ra'ah, he spoke about his brothers, to his father. Do you know what this silence is? The great act of tshuva, precisely for that, because he knew what destruction he nearly brought on the family, because he spoke. And his silence is the ultimate tshuva for that. You're welcome. I'm very, very happy that you asked the question.